All right, welcome back to Friends from Work. Today, we're going to be doing our very first official MCU rankings podcast. That's right, we're going to be going through all of the Infinity Saga today and placing these films into one of five tiers. We're going to go with tier 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then at the very top, what we're calling an S tier or special. Why do we have a special tier? Because as you and I were starting to discuss some of this stuff, and we've been ranking things using the four tiers for a long time, it starts getting really, really complicated with a few, emphasis on a few, select films that really are hard to rank against others given the time they came out, the cultural moment they released in, and kind of the impact they had. If you're going back through all of the MCU and you've done the work, you've watched all the films, these films have special payoff, but they're really hard to rank as standalone films. So that's kind of our cop-out, S tier.
Yeah.
I think the only film that's going to be in there is Thor: The Dark World. Mm-hmm. So we need a separate tier.
But a couple of times.
About three or four times. Yeah. Like whenever you want to watch it, throw it back in the S tier.
Yeah, that's how it works.
So today we're going to be using our Friends from Work rewatch order. We have specifically curated this rewatch order for people who have heard about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, maybe have seen some of the films, but they want to go back and catch up. And even though we call it a rewatch order, there's definitely some merit to it being the first watch order as well. And we can explain as we go. And this rewatch order can be found on our website, the ffwpodcast.com. That's what I'll be referencing over here as we go through the films. And so even though Iron Man kicked us off chronologically, we are going to be starting today, Robbie, with one of your favorite films, Captain America, The First Avenger. Robbie Earle, how are you today, and where would you like to place Captain America, The First Avenger?
Man, this is fun because, yeah, I mean, we started this podcast with our rewatch, which means that our first real episode was talking about Captain America, The First Avenger. So anytime we talk about this movie, it kind of makes me nostalgic from a podcast perspective, but also just because that whole movie feels nostalgic.
Right.
You know, it's Joe Johnson, and he's bringing this kind of classic Star Wars sensibility with some of the visuals, and it's very like hard on your sleeve. This is a movie that I think that I always thought that I held it a bit higher than the average person, but I feel like this is one that has aged fairly well in recent years. So I think I can make a strong case for this being a tier 2 great film.
Yeah, so I'm somewhere between tier 2 and tier 3. Listeners of this podcast know that that has been an ongoing debate for years, as you've mentioned. If it's in tier 2, I think it's toward the bottom of tier 2. There's definitely a few things that haven't aged quite as well. There are a few visuals that are, you know, they're riding the line of sincere versus cheesy. And for the most part, you and I tend to lean towards the sincere stuff and we find the positive in it. But there are a few things that have kind of dated it a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm okay with this placement, but it's for me, the very bottom of great. Closer to, but okay feels unfair because I feel like it's a pretty good movie given the time and kind of what it kicked off for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So let's leave it in tier 2 for now. Great.
I'll take that. I think bottom of tier 2 is fair.
Yeah, very good maybe is a better word. Okay. In our rewatch order, Robbie, you can explain this a little bit. Our next film is Captain Marvel. Please tell us why Captain Marvel is placed here in the Friends from Work rewatch order.
Well, it's chronologically the next film, which I think is helpful because you get the introduction to Nick Fury then rather than, getting this backstory like squeezed in between Infinity War and Endgame down the line. When you're not really wanting that, like it's not as though Fury or Carol were a big part of Infinity War. And so anyway, I think that it works better in that regard. But I also think you realize that there's kind of this through line through the entire like first set of movies leading up to Avengers with this, the Tesseract and them discovering this, like either discovering the Tesseract itself or discovering what it's capable of doing.
Right.
And then Captain Marvel deals exactly with that and kind of like bridges the gap between the first Avenger and the Avengers in terms of what has happened to the Tesseract in the intervening 60 years, 70 years.
It definitely makes tracking the Tesseract a lot easier, right?
Yeah, because I think that, you know, like whenever I was in the theater watching Captain Marvel with friends, you know, that had seen Marvel movies but were not Marvel junkies, when you have that Tesseract reveal at the end of the movie, most of them didn't even really get the significance of that because that wasn't something that had been a huge focus. I mean, even in Infinity War, Thanos like crushes it in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Right.
So I think you could be forgiven for not thinking that that's this massive thing in the landscape of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But I think when you put it right after the first Avenger, where the Tesseract really is the whole focal point of that movie, and then you see that pop up again, you know, 40 years later, I think that it works really well. And it kind of shows you also how the superhuman or like superhuman intelligence community, however you want to look at what SHIELD is doing, is kind of growing towards the point that we find them when Nick Fury introduces himself to Tony.
And I think lastly, if you watch Captain Marvel in release order, it's a little bit strange to go from this Infinity War, like all this like Avengers battle stuff, and then all of a sudden go all the way back to the 90s with Captain Marvel. It feels very kind of out of place, but placing it second not only chronologically helps and not only helps with the Tesseract and keeping that as a thematic through line, it also allows you to go, okay, I'm introduced to this character years ago. Here's Carol. Here's what she's been doing, and here's why she's not here. She's now left the planet, and she's searching and helping other galaxies and whatnot, and therefore, that's why she's not around for the next 20 years. And so I think it does help moving it forward. That being said, since you went first last time, I think that there are things about Captain Marvel that when you put it second in the watch order, it works better. Like as an actual standalone film, I actually think it's pretty decent. However, the film, given when it released, in the same way that Iron Man, you'll never forget where you were when it came out, there was a little bit of the opposite of effect where it felt so weird to have this movie jump in the middle of these other two massive films, Infinity War and Endgame, that you are left with a little bit of a bad taste. Kind of like, why are we bringing a character in this late? And I can't tell how much of that I hold against it. And so for me, it's always been a tier four film, even though I think there are some things it actually does fairly well. I like what Nick Fury's doing. I think the Talos stuff works really well. And that being a twist with the Skrulls, I think works well. There are just a few strange things about it that are biasing my opinion. I want to go tier four. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, tier four is always going to, it's always going to be tough for me. But again, we're looking at this relatively.
Yeah, true. We like all of them.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, like I think a tier four Marvel movie to me is better than like a lot of other action fantasy superhero movies that people would view as passable. So, you know, I think it's...
I almost want to change this right here to say...
To good.
Well, yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
And then this almost pretty, too okay. Pretty, you know? Like, this is kind of average if you consider what we think these are relative to comic book movies. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, or even, like, I think okay is fair for tier four.
Okay.
And, yeah, pretty good for tier three. I feel a lot better about that.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think Captain Marvel is okay.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I like that change. Okay, number three is Iron Man. Now, the only debate here, I think, is this one or S tier? Is this one of the films you say, I think we can rank this one. Because it's so standalone and isolated, I think it's one of the most elite films. It still holds up. I think if you go back and watch it, if you have a kid and your kid grows up to be 15, I think they'll still be able to watch it and feel like that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we'll probably still be involved in some war in the Middle East, so it'll still work.
So it ages well in that way. I don't think this needs to be an S tier, but it's definitely one of the best films they've ever made. And it's, you know, it's a whatever top 100 film ever made.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm with you. I think it's close, but I think tier one is fair. It's right on the line because it's so formative.
But it's not a huge team up and I'm willing to admit that, like, you know, at the very end, there's a little bit of the Obadiah stuff that gets a little wonky, like a little out of control that they're battling themselves, like on the highway and stuff. But the Yinsen stuff, how Tony became Tony, the Pepper stuff. Yeah, it's elite.
I mean, I think what's hard about that movie is it's introducing so much of what makes the MCU the MCU from the get-go. Like, I think you could argue that not all franchises, even when the first movie is beloved, that's not always the case. Like, you don't always see so much that's just being done correctly. But so much of that is also just Robert Downey Jr. So it's like, do we give the movie all the credit for what RDJ is just bringing to it?
Right. But it also, if Favreau's a huge part of it. Yeah. And yeah, like, it's hard to say this, but the MCU probably wouldn't exist in the way it does if this didn't happen when it happened. So that's almost S tier type stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's interesting. The different movies that Marvel Studios was weighing in their initial first push. Like, there, I think Ant-Man, there's a world where Ant-Man could have actually come out before Iron Man, and it would have been the Edgar Wright version.
Right.
It's interesting to think about what that would have done to the trajectory. Like, because I do think so much of that DNA has carried all the way through that if you start with something else that's not a Jon Favreau RDJ team up, how different does the MCU look? Does the MCU exist?
Right. We've done a podcast episode on that before. I can't remember if it was on the main feed or Friends from Work Plus, but just the most formative people in the MCU, Kevin Feige, Robert Downey Jr., the Russos, Jon Favreau. Like, there's a pretty short list of people that really clutched it at this moment. This is going to be fun because right after this in our rewatch order, we have Iron Man 2. It's kind of an Iron Man saga here. And I'll let you go first with this. We just did an episode on Friends from Work Plus about what I feel is the five most over-criticized films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and Iron Man 2 was on this. But that being said, where would you place this? It's okay, right? It's okay.
I think it's okay. You know, looking at the movies in our okay tier, they're almost opposites in that I think that
good point.
Like, the premise of Captain Marvel is really interesting. The way it's executed in general is interesting. Like, on like the macro level,
great point.
What you were talking about with like the Skrull reveal and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not often having a ton of fun like scene to scene in that movie.
Yes, good point.
Whereas like Iron Man 2 as a whole is a bit of a mess.
The premise is a little much. But scene to scene, it is so freaking fun.
Yeah, like the dialogue is funny. Like RDJ he seems like he's having fun with it. And in some ways, it's sort of, I think you mentioned this, like it is the only look we really get at like him in kind of full blown Iron Man mode where like the ego is on full display and he's like, you know, there's like the toxicity that comes with that. But I do think it's like even though that is kind of done away with after the Avengers, I think it's sort of important that it exists because we reference back to it. And it's like, you understand why all these people that will crop up over the years hate Tony in part because of the way that you see him act in this movie.
Right.
But he's also still really like kind of charming and lovable and
right.
But yeah, I think in the end it like evens out at a, yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Such a good call out that specifically at this moment, the two films in tier four are very different. Like, they're in tier four for very different reasons. Up next, The Incredible Hulk. And this has always been one of the weirdest ones to evaluate because It's not very often you have a main character recast and yet the film still be considered canon. And especially recently, there have been films like Brave New World that have actually leaned into the Incredible Hulkness of it. Same kind of thing for me as Iron Man 2, which is like, for the most part, I actually kind of have fun watching that movie. I can't tell how much of my enjoyment is just the nostalgia and being able to kind of laugh at some of the goofy things. You know, sometimes when a movie is bad, it's not easy to laugh at or with.
Yeah.
This movie, like when his heart races because they're having sex, it's just funny to me. Like it's a bad movie thing.
Yeah.
And so it has like its bad movie charm. I still think it's tier four and maybe the bottom. Now, keep in mind, the tiers are the most important thing. I will try to tentatively or like really gingerly rank within the tiers, kind of based off what we have talked about in the past. But
yeah,
that, don't get hung up on that. The tier is where I want you to think. I think it's tier four. I don't think it makes tier three. Do you think it makes tier three, The Incredible Hulk?
No, I think that's for sure tier four.
It's also a very straightforward plot. Like if you like easily tracking what's happening, great. But it is not a Nolan film. I mean, there is,
right.
It is guy becomes Hulk. They are trying to stop him from being Hulk.
And you know what I think is
government
interesting?
Doesn't like it.
the more I've read about this movie, you know, a lot of the drama behind it, I think the drama that led to Norton leaving the film, like he wanted it to be less of a straightforward action movie. He wanted it to be, I think, a lot more introspective and a lot more of a meditation on like the duality of man. And
well, that is not what it is.
Right. That's not what it is. And I think that that was probably the right call ultimately. Like when you're, I mean, I think you could, he would have had a better shot making that movie now or 5 years ago. But I think that at the time, as kind of the immediate summer follow-up to Iron Man and coming off of the Ang Lee Hulk, which was also kind of that, and it left people like, meh.
I think that
they felt like they had to really like
Eric Bana,
put some adrenaline in it.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, like to Norton's credit, I think that the reason he left is this wasn't the movie that he signed up to make.
Up next in our watch order, the last film before our first team-up film, Thor. Thor and four just kind of rhymes, you know?
Yeah. Man.
Isn't this wild? This is a weird experiment that in our rewatch order, we have nothing in the S tier at this point, nothing in tier three, and we're going to have four films in tier four. So for the people who are real upset about the Marvel Cinematic Universe has lost its way, I think they often glaze over some of the speed bumps they were hitting in those first 4 years. Yes, Iron Man was special. Then there were some hiccups. Not hiccups. We still like the movies, but it's not like they were all just banger after banger.
Right. And even recognizing that Captain Marvel was not released in that group, I think, to your point, Thor should also be a tier four movie. And
I think so, you know, too.
I think we've talked about this on the podcast, at least
maybe there.
I think so. Maybe
below Captain Marvel.
Yeah. I think probably.
Yeah. Probably here.
But
it's got so much fun quirks. Like do not mistake.
Yeah,
I mean, my appetite for apathy, like that kind of stuff. But if you go back and watch now, it's aged so poorly. The Dutch angle, Hemsworth is totally not settled in yet.
No,
Portman's not settled in yet. The writing is supposed to be Shakespearean. It's tough at times, but it's fun. It's fun to go back. It's nostalgic, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it is like, it feels kind of like the Hulk, I guess, you know, like the kind of quintessential Hulk story is him on the run from the government. And I feel like, you know, they're doing the Thor cast down to earth, like losing his power. It's done, you know, a bit differently than it's done in the original comics, but they're hitting on a lot of things like the Jane Foster relationship, the Loki villain. Like it does, like, I think Kenneth Branagh did a great job of like, here's Thor in a nutshell, you know, like this is what people need to know.
Like the classic Shakespearean Thor.
You go and you watch the Avengers and
does mother knoweth you weareth her drapes?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. You say you want to figure out who Thor and Loki are. I think it almost works better. Like, you know, you go back and you watch it and it's like, okay, yeah, I kind of know what I need to know, but it's not, it kind of feels like Captain Marvel to me. And that I do think on paper, a lot of it makes sense. Like it has the elements that I would think a Thor origin story should have, but for the reasons you said, like, it's not as though the writing is super strong. Even the acting performances from some of, you know, like Tom Hiddleston, who has become known as one of the stronger actors in the MCU.
Yeah, it's not his best
work. Yeah, so, you know, I think...
And the side characters, not their best
man,
work.
And the costumes in this one are also kind of tough for me. Costumes
tough, yeah. It's tough. It's not great. That brings us to 2012's The Avengers. A moment I will never forget where I was. I didn't grow up with a comic book background. I remember watching Iron Man and thinking that was awesome. And then during all of these films, I kind of haphazardly caught them when I could. Mm-hmm. I tell this story on the podcast. I was so unknowledgeable about this that when Thor's hammer showed up in a post-credit scene, my theater went crazy and I had to Google it. I didn't even know what that was. I didn't know that was a character or anything. But I remember the first time I went to this theater in a mall with some friends to The Avengers. And on the way out, one of my friends who I didn't know was into this stuff said, well, that's the best movie I've ever seen. And I just remember that was the feeling around that time. Like, my gosh, you can take all of these characters who had individual movies and bring them together. And that's why I think it's an S tier. Because are there some things that have aged poorly? In some ways, are the other Avengers movies better? Yes. Like, I just watched Scarlett Johansson talking about making this film in an interview, I think with Variety, where she's talking about, like, we didn't know if this was going to work. We felt goofy, you know, all these different characters from, like, Thor was a totally different thing and now he's here and it somehow did. And it's just a magical experience. But there are some things that have an age as well. But just when you factor in the cultural impact, it's almost impossible to rank that versus, let's say, Captain America, the First Avenger. Or even way later, when we get to, like, how do you rank that against Shang-Chi, for example?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for my part, like, I was a comics reader growing up. I had read a lot of Marvel comics. I had read a lot about Marvel. I had played Marvel video games, you know, which were focused on a lot of the same characters. And I had, you know, been really into the Spider-Man, X-Men stuff, like the shows and the movies. And so, like, I was about as bought in as I could be as a kid. And these were coming out as I was in college, or Thor, Captain America, and the Avengers. And I say that because after Thor and the First Avenger, at the time, I really thought, like, this is not going to go well. Like,
yeah, I remember you said that.
It was like, man, like, other than Iron Man, they have not had a straight banger. Like, it's been, everything else has kind of been fine, you know, which is, like, reflected in our rankings here.
At the time, though, were you having fun watching that stuff as a comic fan? Even Thor. I mean, you were hesitant, but did you leave going, like, that was pretty cool?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I it was different to me. Like, at that point, I'm not sure Chris Hemsworth felt like Thor to me. Like, he very much does now. And I think that that kind of retroactively improves the movie. But at the time, it was just like, for some of the reasons we already talked about with that movie, like, I enjoyed them, but I didn't feel any attachment to his version of Thor or to Chris Evans as Captain America until The Avengers, which I was not even, like, in a hurry to go see. Like, I think someone invited me to go see it opening weekend and I turned them down.
Wow.
Because I was just like...
It's crazy that I was probably more excited to see it
than
you were.
I think I was just... I was nervous and I was kind of like, I liked Iron Man and I'm worried that this is about to, like, crash and burn and that's going to be the end of it. And so I say all that to say, I do feel like this movie was revolutionary, because I think a lot of people felt the same way that I did, whether they were coming at it from like a movie lover perspective or a comics lover perspective. And so
revolutionary. I think
that it did like it did everything that it needed to do, but it also did it like so spectacularly well.
It shouldn't have been as good as it was.
I mean, there hadn't really ever been a movie like that where you had a like you had characters all introduced in their own solo films coming together. But I also think that, you know, the introduction of Whedon here is equally important, because he kind of takes that Jon Favreau dialogue to the next level, like, and sort of puts it a little bit more in the like the comfortably sci-fi space, mm-hmm. where it's like it's grounded enough, but he's good at, like, you know, Whedon was kind of good at group banter in general. That's sort of his thing with Buffy, with a bunch of projects, including his comics. But I think one thing that I've realized over the years, I think Whedon also kind of showed Marvel what they need in a filmmaker. And I think that ultimately informed what the Russos were able to do, because I think Whedon, unlike Favreau, was willing to say, like, I want to be primarily the writer, the dialogue guy, and I want to work on the interactions, the relationships, the character moments. I recognize that I am not equipped to sketch out these action sequences, so I'm going to be totally comfortable giving those over to folks at the studio that know how to do that, that have it in their head how they want this to translate from the comic book page. And I think the result, it could have felt kind of fractured, but it actually feels unified and kind of gives them a path forward where, whether people criticize it or not, I think Marvel has kind of, they know how to make these sequences like we get in the Battle of New York, where you have like Iron Man flying by Hawkeye and yeah. all of the little like these moments that feel kind of seamless. And then Whedon injects like a little bit of like pithy banter.
Jonah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's a really like that to me feels like the right amount of everything, like of drama, of humor, of heart, and like spectacle on a level that none of the other movies had quite captured. Even to your point, like the Iron Man finale is probably the weakest part of the movie. And the final act of the Avengers is one of the best parts of any Marvel movie. Yeah. So it's like they really nailed something there that I think has informed everything since.
It also laid the foundation for an event like the Battle of New York to have ramifications for years. They will now reference this battle in all kinds of ways for a decade. And that's another way that Marvel was kind of ahead of the curve. They didn't just move on. Spider-Man Homecoming cleaning up wreckage, even something like Netflix's Daredevil having a sign right. about the Battle of New York. So that kind of ends like the first chunk. Then we get to the reason we're doing this today, Thor: The Dark World.
Yeah, so...
so immediately just go S-tier here. Yeah, obviously.
Yes, and by the way, that is the end of what we would consider to be a part one of our greater Marvel watch order. Our, you know, Infinity Saga is a part one, part two, part three, because we do depart from what Marvel has considered the phases to be, and that carries over into the multiverse saga, which we will eventually come back to and rank, where we have part six.
No, this is a running joke for this podcast, because Thor: The Dark World is such a polarizing film. On one side of it, it is a disaster. The plot itself virtually doesn't make sense. They mm-hmm. stop this convergence that's so beautiful that nobody can see it, although it seems like everybody can see it, by throwing right. some poles at it and turning on like an electrical thing. And this stops this galactic convergence. So talk about keeping things small scale. No, we're going to have the end of all things be the focal point of this movie. And Jane and Selvig are going to be a key factor in stopping this. And Darcy in London by throwing some poles at it. So on one hand, it's like the dark elves, they just want darkness. There's no other motivation. It's an absolute disaster. On the other hand, the reason we talk about this film and joke about it is, well, there's some things that look pretty cool. The dialogue is pretty sharp and snappy.
Yeah.
And they keep it edited pretty tight. Thor is definitely, like, Chris Hemsworth as Thor is a step forward. And Loki is a huge step forward. Tom Hiddleston as Loki. Yeah.
And also the way character more design for both of those.
The music is great in Thor 1, but I think it even takes a step up in Thor the Dark World. So there are actually like two sides of this coin for us, and that's why it's a running joke. We started this podcast in part because we were like, hey, the Thor the Dark World is not that bad, right? Like, I kind of like rewatching it. I'll rewatch it right now. If you want to watch it tomorrow, let's do it. And so I think it's got to be a tier 4 film just because by film – like by film metrics, it's not good. But just know you can find us talking about Thor the Dark World in this podcast for literally 5 years. So we will defend this thing. Probably I think
that's right. Yeah. It is funny. We'll probably see this a few times. Not always. Like, there are some exceptions. But I think often the second installments of these Marvel franchises, like, are movies that we kind of have soft spots for, because I think they give us time just with the character.
Yeah, good point.
Like, kind of in like their standard status quo. Like, I think that
that's a weakness we have.
Yeah, well, it's like we have an origin story, and then part three is normally some version of kind of tearing the character down. And those are often the best movies in the franchises. But it's also like, you know, you kind of have this movie where Thor is sort of at his like kind of classic Thor self, throughout the whole thing. And
look at this, by the way, 5 already in tier 4, 5 films of the 8.
Man.
And that brings us to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy in some ways might be the greatest standalone film that they've ever made. If you were just to show somebody who's never heard of this stuff one movie, it would definitely be like Iron Man or Guardians of the Galaxy. But Guardians of the Galaxy has some of the humor, the heart, the team-up nature that the MCU stands for. Now, you and I tend to lean more towards Tony, Cap, and Thor as far as where our preference lies. But the ending of this movie is so powerful. I'll never forget to take my hand. Peter, take my hand. It's so funny. It's James Gunn, but reined in a little bit by Marcus and McFeely. Like, there's a script trimming here that really benefits the film. It's one of the films I'd feel most confident saying, please go watch this. I'm going to put it ahead of Iron Man. I think it's a better movie than Iron Man. I don't think it has any flaws. It's just not a team-up film, but it basically doesn't have any flaws to me.
I know. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking if that is an S-tier movie.
I don't think so.
I mean,
we've got to be very, very careful with our S-tier, okay?
No, I know, but I'm also thinking, like, if not this, like, then I'm not sure, other than Infinity War and Endgame, what would constitute S tier.
I think that might be our only S tier for this era. And we could talk about S tier in phases 4, 5, and 6 in a minute. It's up there. It's close. It's close.
I just think
I could be swayed.
As I'm looking, and this is someone that is not, like, the Guardians is not my favorite corner of the MCU. Just because I resonate more with the main Avengers characters.
What's your argument for S tier then?
I think it's doing something. I mean, kind of the same argument that I had for Iron Man, I guess. But I think that Guardians was maybe more transformative from a genre perspective than Iron Man. Like, it's not as though we had never had a superhero that was funny and quippy before Tony Stark. It was just that they did it really, really well. And Robert Downey Jr. inhabited the character so well, and they grounded it so well. But I think that Guardians really is kind of the first of its kind. And I think that so many things since that, both within the MCU and outside the MCU, have kind of tried to replicate it. Like, just from the very opening scene that we've talked about forever, like the introduction of the soundtrack, which prior to that was not even really like Back in Black and the other AC/DC stuff within the Iron Man context.
But because it's revolutionary doesn't mean it's S tier, right? It could still just be, I'm not even saying S tier is above tier one at all times. Like, I think Guardians of the Galaxy is a better movie than the Avengers. I just think,
yeah,
like with the Avengers, I think S tier helps because you can explain away some of the Dutch angles. Like, actually the flaws is why it's S tier. Yeah. Because you're like, yeah, I know that's dated and there's some Dutch angles and things like that. But if you were there and if you watch and you go for the payoff, then it pays off so spectacular. That's S tier. Not just that it's revolutionary. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy still to this day doesn't have a lot of flaws that I'd have to say, I can't rank this, because it still just is a really good movie.
But then is the criteria for S tier, is it?
It's unrankable. Is Guardians unrankable?
No, but I guess, so it's almost like.
I'll move it if you want to. That's just my pushback.
No, it's fair. I think it depends on how we view the S tier then. Like, if it's like it comes with too much attached to it for us to look at it objectively.
Right.
But we like it. I'm just trying to think, like,
is Age of Ultron an S tier film? I don't think so, right?
Right. But I think that I could argue that, you know, I think that's probably right. We can just keep it. I guess I just don't want the S tier movies to just be Avengers movies, because that almost feels like a cop out.
Right. I think No Way Home might be an S tier film. Because we've even had the discussion about that versus Homecoming. We'll get there in a second. Okay, I'll put Guardians up here for now. TBD. I might move that.
That's fair.
And that brings us to Iron Man 3. This is a hard one.
I would put this in... I think tier 2 for me.
2?
Yeah.
I think this is our first 3.
I think Iron Man 3 is a good, like, it's one of those movies that is great as a standalone movie. I think it doesn't feel tied in to the level where it's like satisfying as an MCU fan. Like, I feel like you come, like, especially in release order, you come out of Avengers and it's like, it isn't necessarily the next thing you want to see. Like, you kind of want to see the story keep going and the universe keep expanding. And this sort of does the opposite of that. But I think that also lays some important groundwork for Tony down the line. And as a standalone movie, I think it's really funny. I think it's approachable. I think RDJ does a great job in it.
I think all that too. I just think it's the very, very top of this. I think I give more props to the first Avenger, right? Captain America. Either way, if it's up here, I'd drop it over here, right?
I think that's right. I think it's bottom of tier 2. All right.
I think it's right here. We're talking one spot difference, but it's either, like, I don't know if I'd use the word great with Iron Man 3 because of that, but we'll put it here for now.
I just don't think that there are really any, like, glaring flaws in Iron Man 3.
I've always said Iron Man 3 for me is a better movie than Iron Man 2, but I would much rather watch Iron Man 2, and I wonder what that is. I think it's a little bit the time in the suit, which Iron Man 3 doesn't have a ton of. It's a little bit that it's very standalone-ish, like you talked about. A little bit the president and extremist stuff is a little goofy. I don't love that his suits become really flimsy at the end, although explainable, because they're all these different versions. But yeah, it's, I mean, obviously it's still a good movie. I'll leave it there. Again, this Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man 3, I might move one way or the other. Now we have Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Not an S tier, but a tier one film, no doubt, in my mind.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Same kind of thing, like what this meant for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think was huge. Above or below Iron Man, do you think? I think just below. Ooh, that's a close one.
Yeah.
It's a better movie, but meant less. A little bit. I'll go just above. Just above.
Yeah, see, okay, so this is my thing. I think The Winter Soldier is a great example of a tier one film. And I'm thinking more and more that not only should Guardians be S tier, I kind of think Iron Man should be S tier. Because as we're sitting here trying to decide how to rank Iron Man against Winter Soldier, you inherently start looking at like the movie has less going on. It has less to play with. Like,
but I'm with you that if we don't populate the S tier, it's just going to end up being three Avengers films, right? If that's the only criteria, is that it has to be a team up.
I'm with you.
Like, it's hard. Like, Winter Soldier is a better movie than Iron Man, but didn't mean as much. That's where it gets really hard to rank it.
And which I think I feel sometimes with Guardians too. Like, you can make a movie that is every bit as funny and like emotional as Guardians right now, and it could be, or better, right? And it's still going to be hard to say that it should be ranked above it or against it, because there's just something about, like, I guess that's why I focus on like the revolutionary aspect. Like, all three of those, I think, were kind of sea change moments that it's hard for me to gauge.
Okay, so I'm going to leave that in S tier now, Iron Man in S tier. That being said, briefly, Winter Soldier was a revolutionary film in its own right. I think in some ways it set the tone for the action side of the MCU. The Russos, this is their debut. They took a character like Captain America that was very, very, very differently portrayed in the first Avenger as a sincere Captain America. And you can make an argument that film was needed. You needed to see Captain America that way. Mm-hmm. And now you start Captain America on a journey of questioning his, I'm just going to follow the government. And on top of that, like, filmmaking wise, it's a totally different feel now for the first time in the MCU. A lot of like shaky cam stuff, hand-to-hand combat. And this is going to set the tone for the way the Russos like to direct movies. And that's going to matter later.
Yeah.
It was a big change, even in how he looked. Captain America, the Winter Soldier is definitely the perfect example of an elite MCU film.
Yeah. No, and you're right. It is revolutionary in its own right. I think it's also like, like Winter Soldier almost does, it's like almost Iron Man 2 that's done better.
Or done
it's,
well.
You know, it's tighter, and because it's like, it is doing a lot of kind of world building and like status quo shifting.
And like some pretty big like twists.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think of twists with the MCU until this movie, really. Right? Like, Guardians is amazing. Doesn't really have like twists, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Thriller style.
I mean, and you could go through you could go through a lot of Marvel movies. Like, you know, I always say you could really watch Iron Man and then watch Avengers, and it kind of, you're fine. Like, they give you enough background, and you can then watch, like, you don't really have to watch Iron Man 3 or Thor 2 before you watch Age of Ultron. Like, you'll kind of be fine. But the Winter Soldier is like essential storytelling within the MCU. And I think that kind of sets a precedent that those movies will do that. And that those are kind of second only to the Avengers movies in how like core they are to the ongoing narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that starts with the Winter Soldier. I think it peaks with Civil War, but we'll get there soon.
And then Avengers Age of Ultron, which you and I are a firm believer in. We've argued for this in the podcast for years. There are some ways you can view this movie as super essential. Like, if we don't ever see the Avengers operating at their peak level, then is Infinity War as effective? Is the first Avengers as effective when they finally team up? this is a perfect look at that middle era. There are some concerns with the film. I think Age of Ultron is a perfect example of a tier two film, like towards the top for me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
And if you want to hear us talking about that film, man, you can find that on our podcast, EFFWpodcast.com. Go find our episodes wherever you subscribe to your podcasts and check us talking about that film ad nauseum.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Okay. That kind of, you know, the Avengers film a little bit sums up the second era there, that middle phase. And now we jump forward with Doctor Strange. Robbie, take the wheel.
You know, this is one that I think on our original rewatch, I was kind of hard on.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Again, it's grown on me a lot.
Yeah.
Over the years, I think I would put this in tier two as well.
Agreed.
But I would say high tier two. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe just below Ultron.
I think that's right.
It's definitely above those other two, I think.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's probably a better movie than Ultron, but I think that, you know, that's where it gets hard because the ensemble nature just makes Ultron so watchable.
Doctor Strange has aged very well.
Yeah.
When it came out, there was a little bit of, okay, yes, the visuals were trippy and cutting edge of the time and all that stuff, and that was awesome. Mm-hmm. But I remember there being a little bit of a feeling of like, okay, has Marvel at this point now slipped into a little bit of a formula? Here's your hero, he gets broken down, and then he has to kind of battle his way back up, and he saves the day at the end. But I think that belittles so much of that film. There's some really like deep writing between mm-hmm. him and the Ancient One. I think the way they handle the Christine and Doctor Strange dynamic really works. Watching, like, Benedict is pretty settled in from the get-go. You see him and you're like, that's Doctor Strange right mm-hmm. away. And I think watching his fall from grace really hurts and therefore effective. I'm with you. I think we reviewed it kind of going like, that was cool. That's good. And then on subsequent watches, I've been like, this is maybe a little bit better than good.
Yeah, I do. Like, I really like what it's doing philosophically. And I do think that it differentiates Strange from Tony more than I initially gave it credit for. Like, I think, yeah, it's that kind of cookie cutter thing. But I think that it's really highlighting, like, with Tony, it's a, like, it's ego loss, but it's more like, you need to care about people other than yourself. Like, that's kind of like the push to like stop doing what makes the company the most money and start doing what's actually better for the world. And that all kind of culminates in his journey that ends in Endgame. But I feel like with Doctor Strange, it's ego, but more from a control perspective. And I think that is teased out really well in that initial movie, this idea that like, he's so used to being this high class surgeon that can kind of, he can like fix the unfixable things. And he's the guy that you call in to save the day. And I love that like, unlike Tony, who like Tony's superpower essentially is him just fixing his way to success. Like, he builds it himself. Whereas like Steven, it's almost like he has to let go of that to be able to succeed. Like, he can't like brute force his way to being the Sorcerer Supreme. And yeah, that like the conversation with the Ancient One there at the end, I think is really getting at that. And I think that makes him a unique character and it does make his origin like unique enough. And then you add on the visuals, and I think that like a really interesting final showdown that I think was pretty memorable, the I Come to Bargain.
A very much a twist or a play on the third act of a Marvel film, you know, that yeah. China is kind of going backwards and that he's reliving this same moment. Not how I saw it ending, in a pleasant surprise kind of way.
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. This is where you and I need to take this, like, probably off air and fight about this one. Is this our first three?
I think so. I think that's right.
I am biased against this film just because this was a foundational memory for me, sitting in the theater, given the release time of this, thinking, oh my goodness, we're finally going to get, like, this is when I was feeling like the Infinity Saga needs to get going. Thanos was introduced in the Avengers. You saw a glimpse of him in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I thought they're going to use this as a way to start advancing the overarching plot. They're going to use Guardians of the Galaxy 2 to talk about Infinity Stones or Thanos more, and really, it is totally isolated from that. None of that applies here, and so I remember just kind of being mad at the movie. On top of that, I don't think it's very funny. Like, I think it's Guardians of the Galaxy 1 trying too hard is what Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is. The redeeming thing for me, the qualities, I guess, are that it's creative, and they really land the plane on Peter's father's death and, like, that the way the film ends with Rocket actually just shedding a tear, and that whole funeral sequence is a pretty cool way to end the movie.
Yeah.
You gotta get past some goofy things, though, for me.
Yeah, the Yondu stuff works so well at the end. And, you know, I do think a lot of this movie is funny. It's, you know, it's one of those where there are a lot of jokes. It's super jokey, and so that means that there are some that don't hit, and that's always hard to get past. But yeah, I think for me, this is one that's very top of tier three.
And I would go opposite. This is like middle of tier four. I'm okay with it being tier three because I'm admitting I'm biased, but I would much rather watch Iron Man 2 right now. If I had 10 viewings, I'd watch Iron Man 2 9 times and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 once. Is how I would do it. But I am admitting I'm biased. I'm leaving it in tier three.
But you also know, like, you can watch Iron Man 2 like 9 times and never feel anything like what you're going to feel every time you watch Guardians 2.
That's true for the ending of it. Ant-Man.
I think Ant-Man is another tier three. Like, that to me is the kind of the quintessential tier three film. Like, yeah. I think that is a straight up pretty good movie. There aren't really a lot of issues with it. It's just kind of like,
yeah, you know, it is what it is. Kind of, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny and it's a good story. Candace and Annika, our wives, really like it, but it's not going to, I mean, it doesn't really hit you very hard emotionally. It's not like the funniest movie ever.
Yeah.
It's not like the most ingenious story ever. It's literally the prototypical, that's a pretty good movie. It's a good movie. You know, that's how you feel about Ant-Man.
Yeah. I mean, I think this one has aged better for me also, like Doctor Strange. And I think part of that, I think both of those characters benefit from, you know, subsequent appearances, kind of in the same way that Thor does, where you go back and inject those with more meaning. But yeah, I think it's just like, I think it had like 80% or so, like 79 when it first came out. And, you know, because I remember checking because everyone thought Ant-Man might be the first Marvel flop. And I still think that's about right. Like, it's
right. If you go in thinking it's going to be a flop, then it's a very surprisingly good movie. Like, if Ant-Man is Marvel's just pretty good movie, that still says a lot relative to what people thought it would be and relative to other comic book movies.
Yeah.
But in comparison to this, I think that's fair. There's no way you're going to vote Ant-Man over Winter Soldier, for example.
Right.
Captain America, Civil War. Now, this is, again, another argument now for S tier.
Yeah.
I I think it's just here. I think it's the best tier one film we have. Is this an S tier film? I think you can rate this one, right?
I think that's right. I think as much as I love Civil War, it's not doing something wholly new, like in the same way that some of those S tier ones are that I wanted up there for a reason. I would say that is, I think Civil War is incredible, and I think it might be the top, I think it should be the top tier one film that we have so far. But I think that Infinity War, like, it sort of lays the groundwork for that to then move us into like the stratosphere.
Yeah. The only argument for S tier is just that, you know, it's another team up film. And so when you compare Civil War and Winter Soldier, what's the better movie? We always have the preference towards Civil War because of the Avengers and what it means. It's basically an Avengers stand-in film. It just, it does have a little bit more of the, if you've watched it all along the way, there's a little bit more kind of payoff there, emotional payoff, like the interactions between the characters, yeah, over like Winter Soldier for me. And I guess that's also an argument for S tier. But I also say, like flaw-wise, yeah, like to somebody who's not super into the MCU, it can be a little bit convoluted and a little bit kind of what's the point of all this if you were totally not into the MCU. Whereas I think like Winter Soldier, yeah, you can easily kind of track what's going on. But I think if you're invested in the MCU, Civil War is one of my favorite movies. I think on my list, personally, it's like my fifth favorite MCU film. And we're now, what, yeah, 40 projects deep. I freaking love this movie. And it should be shouted out, some of the non-Civil War things. Like when you think of Civil War, you think of Tony and Cap, and you think of like the airport sequence.
Yeah.
But there are other things in this movie that need to be shouted out, like Black Panther's introduction, Spider-Man's introduction, how, yeah, those characters seamlessly fit into this story that's not really about them, is remarkable.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right. Like, I think, to me, if there is... If there's going to be one of the Captain America films that would go S tier, it would be Winter Soldier for the reasons you talked about before. But I do think Civil War is a, like, I prefer watching it to Winter Soldier. And I think Steve and Tony both, like, you know, whether you look at it as their characters or the actors behind them, like, they really moved into a different, like, onto a different level with that movie. Like, not that they were like not already turning in great performances. I think it was just the characters had been existing long enough to where they really felt an identification with them. And there is an established rapport now between, like, we've had two movies with Cap and Tony together. And, you know, Age of Ultron, we got more of that dynamic, but it was kind of more openly hostile. And in Civil War, even though they are actually like at war with each other where they weren't in Age of Ultron, I feel like there's a lot like there's more of a like a tenderness to the
and
conversations
empathy
they have. Yeah, it's like I feel like there was a moment I had like leaving Civil War when I just felt like this burst of like momentum from the MCU. Like it was like, oh man, we are like, it felt like Infinity War, Endgame, like whatever we were heading towards or thought we were heading towards at the time, like could not come fast enough. Like I was so invested. And to your point, I think that's part of what made like Guardians 2 in the release order like
frustrating.
Yeah. Cause you're like, oh man, like I feel like we're ramping towards something crazy here. And
if at this point you've watched all of these for before Civil War, you've watched all the Captain America films, you've watched all the Iron Man films, you've watched the Avengers films, and you are pouring into them, there's nothing like the acting performance you get when Tony finds out that Bucky killed his mom and he says to Steve, "Did you know?" And then, yeah, he says, like, "Did you?" And then when Steve just says, "Yes," and he goes, and steps back, yeah, and just like gathers his thoughts. There's nothing that will beat that moment and the moment of Steve ramming his shield into the arc reactor of Tony's suit and both of them just laying on the ground and Bucky missing an arm laying on the ground, all of them. And the music's playing and you just feel so so sad, even though you know they'll probably figure it out. It doesn't matter. In the moment, everything is led up to this crazy sadness. Like, yeah, you just feel sadness. And then Black Panther's outside. You feel sad about him losing his father. It's just, it's like, yeah, it's all paid off to this moment of, oh my goodness, how did we get here? And it's such an elite thing. Black Widow, quickly, briefly tell people, why is this here? Why are we ranking this today? Take the lead on this.
This is obviously not technically an Infinity Saga film, but it should be. I think that by and large, I mean, really the only thing that would anchor it after this is just that, you know, it introduces Yelena, who then kind of becomes a big figure in the multiversal saga stuff. But I think even that is helped more by knowing she was around and in the background here too, kind of like what we said with Captain Marvel. Black Widow is a movie that Marvel was sort of on and off trying to make for a long time. And I think that if Kevin Feige had had his way, this movie would have been made in phase two or phase three. And I think that it took things shaking up within the Marvel corporate structure to allow this to finally happen. But I think, like, so much of the like either hate or apathy that people feel for this movie, I think can be tied to when it was released. I think it is clearly, like you said, like it slots right within the post Civil War era. It actually follows up immediately from Civil War. Mm-hmm. And I think serves a, like, sometimes these movies can feel unnecessary. Like, it's sort of like the difference between Rogue One and Han Solo, where, like,
good point.
You know, one of them is like, oh wow, yeah, I didn't know I needed this, but I did. And one is like, turns out I didn't need this.
Yeah, sure.
And this was one where, like, I thought
it makes the plot holes better.
Yeah, I mean, she had a really interesting story in Civil War that we kind of don't get any follow up on in that movie, and then we just see her again in Infinity War and kind of connect the dots. But I like knowing what, like, a super spy does when she's on the run in this way, and like an ex-Avenger where she's now kind of like she's known all around the world, which is the total opposite of kind of what she was prior to that. And then that coming up against, like, the Black Widow, like the Red Room structure. So I think it makes sense to watch here. And
I will make the argument that if this film had released at this moment, it'd be viewed even higher. I argue that this is the most over-criticized film in the MCU. How do you feel about this? I feel like it's a tier two film. The third act has a few question marks that lower it. Other than that, I think musically, visually, acting, writing, plot, it's a tier one film with a third act that doesn't quite live up, just quite. Again, emphasis on quite.
Yeah.
I feel like it's, like, here, it's maybe not quite as solid as Doctor Strange, but I think it's better than these films below it, middle of tier two. How do you feel about that?
I think that's exactly right.
That one is such a fascinating film. Again, I like Black Widow so much. Black Panther, Robbie, I'm going to make the argument I forgot about this earlier. This is, like, the most S-tier film that's not an Avengers film possible.
Yeah, I think
Black Panther is an S-tier. And here's why. For years, you and I have argued about this, because Black Panther is not my favorite film. If I was just doing preference, Black Panther's like mid-tier two for me. And for you, it's like mid-tier one. We've disagreed on this film a lot. But also, this is the prototypical S-tier, because in some ways, Wakanda Forever does things better than the first Black Panther, but you can't even compare them, just because this was as much of a cultural movement as any of these films in the S-tier. And I think Black Panther kind of is also S-tier, because it a little bit transcends the conversation around Black Panther, a little bit transcends just movie making talk.
Yeah.
Now it also meant so much to culture, like to people in our life.
Yeah.
That it just gets really, really hard to rank. I do think there are some things I would have changed. Like, I wish that the punches had more impact in that movie.
Yeah.
I wish it was a little bit bloodier. Not that I'm a slasher guy, but I wish it didn't feel kind of cartoony in that way.
Yeah.
And I think the third act is a little bit kind of small feeling for what they're setting up. But yeah, you forget that so much that movie is like the car chase and the casino and the very beginning of the film and setting up Wakanda. And so those are all positives.
One, like,
for
the
me.
Museum. Like, all of the kind of smaller scale sequences in that movie are, I mean, to yes, the extent you consider the car chase to be that, are really fun. Yeah, I think correct, it's whenever it tries to open up and do like a epic battle.
Right. We falters. Feel like Coogler still hasn't nailed that one tiny detail yet. The epic scale battle, yeah, he hasn't gotten a grasp of. And so there are some concerns. But again, because of what it meant for the MCU, but also for culture, I feel like that is a perfect S tier film.
I think that's right. I think I was going to make the same argument, and you know, it's
kind of relieving, like, for us, because we've argued over this one forever. Yeah. So now we don't have to worry about
it. And I think we've argued about it in part for some of the reasons that it should be in S tier. I mean, like, I think, but there are things about it, even aside from its kind of cultural significance, like the Killmonger villain is, mm-hmm, is such a great one. I mean, it's one of the best Marvel villains in, like, premise. And
the
I
music.
Think, yeah, man, the music is so great.
The costumes.
Chadwick is so, like one thing we don't really get from him in Civil War that we do in Black Panther is just like how much charm he brings to the role. Like, you know, because in Civil War, his dad's just died. And
oh, for
and,
sure.
But here it's like we kind of see him laughing with Shuri. Charisma. And like, it's just like,
also the creation of Wakanda.
Oh yeah. Like the way it's visualized and the costumes, mm-hmm, and like the way that vibranium is like unpacked and understood in a way that's not just like, I mean, it's the first time that we've had that delved into beyond like, it's a really like malleable and like indestructible metal, which is kind of all we got up to that point. And though also like, I love the way they utilize Claw and kind of the feint, yep, there where you think that he's going to be like the major villain. And to me, there are a lot of things about it that would make it a tier one movie just in the, like the details of it. But I think you're right. Like it again feels like a step forward where we're getting subject matter dealt with in the MCU on a level that it hasn't even really tried to before then.
Spider-Man Homecoming. I think another one of these prototypical tier one films,
yep,
right? Like,
yep,
Spider-Man Homecoming, if you remove your thoughts on Spider-Man as a character and like you're like remove the time period as far as the Andrew Garfield films just being canceled. And that was already right, a reboot of Tobey Maguire. Remove all that. I'm not sure any film has ever captured what it feels like for Spider-Man to be in high school better than Homecoming. Homecoming, keeping it small while still tying into the Battle of New York, keeping it small while still having a cool fight sequence against Vulture, etc. This movie is essentially perfect. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I mean, it's not an origin story for Spider-Man, so take that right, with a grain of salt. But as a film, it's almost perfect.
I think that, I mean,
I think it's better than Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, actually. I think it sets a high bar for what Fantastic Four is going to need to do. You know, when you're looking at movies that are kind of rebooting or restarting an existing franchise, for, you know, in both cases for the third time, technically for the fourth, if you count the OG Fantastic Four movie that nobody's seen. This is how you do it. Like, this is like you take a character that people love, you recognize that there are things that people already know, you lean into the things that made the character work so well on the comic book page. And I think that's one of that's what's so encouraging to me about Fantastic Four is I'm seeing a lot of the same instincts there where it's like you see them going to the Lee Kirby stuff in the same way that I think Watts really went into the kind of the spirit of the Stan Lee, Steve Ditko era, even though, you know, like, unlike in Fantastic Four, where they are actually rooting it in a 60s vibe, which kind of makes it easier in some respects, here they didn't have the opportunity to do that. So it was kind of this weird thing of like, we've already had two Spider-Man franchises, like you said, within a decade, and there's not really much we can do like to modernize it, like that hasn't already been done, but also like they've told the really classic stories and used the classic villains. And so like this was like such a deftly handled project, and it's just, yeah, it's perfect.
Four films to go. We'll explain that in 1 second. Ant-Man and the Wasp for me is a perfect example of a tier three film again.
Yep.
It's almost identical to Ant-Man. It really is. It's a rare case where the sequel isn't a polarizing take. I think it's actually just Ant-Man, but a little bit better in a lot of ways. Like, it's basically the same, more of the same. If you liked Ant-Man, you're not going to dislike Ant-Man and the Wasp. But I think it's a little bit funnier. Mm-hmm. Walton Goggins brings a lot to this.
Yeah.
All of the characters, I think, are just like 2% more settled than. The writing makes sense for them a little bit more. But again, it's the same kind of thing we said for Ant-Man for me, which is like, it's a good film. Like, if Ant-Man and the Wasp was another comic book property film, you'd be like, wow, that's great. Mm-hmm. But this is just a really solid Marvel film. That's not going to move the needle a ton. You're not going to cry. You're not going to like cry laughing. You're not going to be like, wow, that's the coolest action set I've ever seen. Oh my goodness, that story no one's ever thought of. It's not that, but it's just really fun. I think of Ant-Man and the Wasp as just a fun time in the theaters. It kind of actually makes me feel nostalgic because it was just fun to see. And then shout out to, in release order, this came out after Infinity War. And so it was kind of weird. Like, how are they going to do Ant-Man and the Wasp after all these people got dusted?
Yeah.
And they were kind of smart into placing this film before Infinity War, except for the post-credit sequence, which is a really chilling post-credit sequence and a reminder, one of my favorites, a reminder of what's been going on, even though you just had a fun time at the theater. Tier three, towards the top of tier three for me.
Yeah, I think, I know we originally ranked Ant-Man and the Wasp ahead of Ant-Man. I think that I'm still there. I go back and forth. I definitely don't think it was a step down, but I think that both do a great job of being accessible and of utilizing the conceit of like shrinking things or blowing things up. And so I, you know, like the car chase in Ant-Man and the Wasp is really fun with like the Hot Wheel pack, and they introduce some elements there, and it's a better villain, I think, than in the first one, especially in light of, you know, what we've now gotten in Thunderbolts. So, yeah, but I think a for sure tier three film.
One quick note here. If you're using our rewatch order, that's found on the ffwpodcast.com. This is the one time, along with the Captain Marvel, so I guess the second time, where the post-credit sequence might not make sense if you've truly never seen the films. If you have seen the films, it's kind of a fun, like, oh yeah, I remember that's coming.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the films, that kind of spoils something for you. So we actually used to tell people, if you're using our rewatch order as your first ever viewing, we think it's the best way to view the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I probably would not watch the post-credit sequence to Captain Marvel or Ant-Man the Wasp if you're using it as your first ever showing to somebody else. Then we have an absolute banger. You and I are partial to this film. Never forget where we were kind of thing. Thor Ragnarok. To me, this is not S tier. This is a tier one film.
Yeah.
And for me, preference-wise, probably ahead of Homecoming, maybe behind Civil War. For years, you and I have gone back and forth on Guardians 1, Civil War, and Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. Where do those fit? I think at this exact second, I'm going to put it at the bottom of those three in my head, but still just, I mean, so funny, most chill-inducing moment.
Yeah.
It's just such a good movie.
I think, yeah, I mean, I like having Guardians kind of off the table and S tier for that reason, because I think part of what I've always struggled with is like, it, one, you know, Ragnarok doesn't exist without Guardians. Like, there's no doubt about that. And I think that it was clearly riffing on kind of what Gunn had said, had established and kind of given people permission to do. But yeah, like for me, it's a dream scenario because it has that dynamic that I really like from Guardians, but with a character that had been so underutilized to this point.
Right.
And there's just a level for like
a rebirth of a character almost. It's very similar to Winter Soldier in that way. Although Winter Soldier was redoing a character whose original movie was better than Thor's original movies. If you look at our list, Thor's original movies were tier four, both of them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, here comes this film, a total reimagining of it, just like Winter Soldier. But wow, yeah, you're right. But now it's Thor, a character that we're like extra invested in.
Well, and you know, this really is the introduction of like, of Thor as the, like the nuclear option, you know, like.
Yeah, good point, good point.
Like, if you look back,
that's such a good point.
The first Thor movies, the first Avengers movies, like Thor is kind of like he's the strongest.
He's very strong, but like he battles Iron Man in the first one, and like Iron Man's holding his own.
And even in Age of Ultron, he's battling Ultron alongside Tony and Vision. Like
right.
You get the sense that he's Thor, but this is where we first see Thor as the and it sets up Infinity War.
It also makes sense story-wise, though, too. Like, they kind of explain why it took him this long to realize that power.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean,
like, we knew he was strong, but also the character himself found more inside of himself to become stronger.
Well, and that's kind of, you know, I think that's one of the things
What are you, the god of hammers?
That, man, that the Infinity Saga, like, Captain Marvel didn't have the time that Thor did to kind of put in the it didn't put in the reps, I guess, or sure, the character didn't, so
marinate
that we didn't get to
and grow,
see her
yeah.
you know grow into that moment. It's just sort of like she arrives more or less fully formed, like she has the one
good
movie
point.
but yeah, it's so satisfying when we finally get there, especially at like that, you know, like if you compare this to Civil War, for instance, where we talk about these third films being the ones where they're kind of torn down. Like, yes, we have him lose Mjolnir and we do have him like cast out, but then we see him like, come back resurgent, like the most powerful he's ever been. And that's a different, like really satisfying dynamic, like heading into like Infinity War as well. And yeah, I mean, the villains, great, like Hela's great, the music in this is great, it's so funny.
Mark Ruffalo is so funny, and it's kind of a team-up movie because Mark Ruffalo's in it.
Yeah,
when Thor and Banner are having the conversation, it is so funny. Well, now you've been, I've only been on one planet. Well, now you've been on two.
I don't want to fight your sister. That's
just
personal.
Weird. I never liked him. I like you more. No, now you're just like.
It's, I mean.
Strongest Avenger. Okay,
it's going to be.
Break. Okay, damn you, Stark.
That is going to be the one to beat. You know, like if they do make another Thor movie, that's always going to be the measuring stick.
Then we have Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, the reason the S tier was created.
Yeah.
The reason the S tier was created was because you and I, every time a film came out since this moment, we're like, it's obviously not one or two, it's three at best. Mm-hmm. And that kind of bothered us. Like, what could they even do to top the payoff that these two films had? And we're like, there's probably nothing, because they don't even have the characters now that they had in this saga available. And so it's kind of a lame way to rank movies if no matter how good a movie is, it can't top that experience. And so therefore we created the special tier, just because I'm not sure this will ever be recreated in film. I know that sounds hyperbolic, but to lay the foundation with Iron Man and then to fast forward 15 years at that point, 11 years, 12 years at the point.
Yeah.
To fast forward that long and then be able to land the plane, like first of all, take the plane off and then land it so spectacularly between these two is such a remarkable feat of cinematic history. I'm not being hyperbolic. Like, it will never happen again in that way. And it fundamentally, I think, changed our entire film culture forever. Like, meaning everyone, even who wasn't a fan of this, whether you hate that what it means for film or like what it means for film,
yeah,
will remember what it was like when Infinity War and Endgame were in theaters. Endgame being the biggest movie of all time. It recently got topped a little bit, but for weird reasons. But like,
yeah,
everyone knows that moment. And so you and I, we go back and forth on which is a better film. I think I like shot for shot, Infinity War is more fun and it had such an impact on me. Mm-hmm. Endgame is carrying the weight of landing the plane that Infinity War is not having to do. We've talked about this literally for hundreds of hours, hundreds at this point. But because of the impact, I think we give the nudge to Endgame just because of what it meant. Although yeah, we both probably like watching Infinity War more, weirdly. But with what those movies were tasked with doing, it is just a remarkable feat that overwhelmingly both films have a very, very high critic and audience score and were both massive in the box office when really it shouldn't be possible.
Yeah. I mean, and I think Endgame is so special for all the reasons you just mentioned, like the way that it lands the plane. And, you know, like it's worth noting, not only will that probably never be replicated, although I don't know, you know, Secret Wars will have some potential to do some really interesting things. It's just, it's different. So it's hard to gauge it. But I think even before that, like, I'm just trying to think, you know, the only thing for me that kind of comes close, not just because of my own fandom, but I, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was right, also like massive in terms of the box yep, office and critical reception. It still is tied for the most ever Academy Awards. So like Return of the King was a moment, but it still was nothing like this. And I think that that's the closest I can think of, like a situation where something like finishes out a story so satisfactorily that it makes people like the prior entries more. Like there were so many people that found our podcast during COVID in the time following Endgame and went back and watched a lot of these movies for the first time yep, because they were now invested. And, yep, you know, we've talked about the things that were coming out even just in 2019 that were disappointments, like the final seasons of Game of Thrones, the end of the Skywalker saga. But even like, you know, when we talk about like best superhero franchises of all time, like the Dark Knight trilogy did not end on this high of a note. And I love the Dark Knight Rises, but I don't think people view it as the high point of the series, you know, like
right,
it's a really, I would love to hear.
Yeah. Or like, the last movie is also the best one.
Yeah.
And like, it's got the 10 years going. That's the other thing. Like we had not had 10 yeah, years. I even think like, if you want to relate it to Lost or like a long running TV series, like what's the yeah, other thing that's closest where you get like 6 years maybe, but even then the ending was controversial.
Right.
You know, like a long running thing. First of all, nothing's been 10 years, but a long running thing that also is the best thing as the last entry
yeah,
that just, it just doesn't happen.
I mean, I like, yeah, I especially.
And you'll just theater, never forget. Like if you've done all the work and you've watched all these movies, you will feel something you've never felt when the Avengers lose at the end of Infinity War. You'll just, something will happen in your heart when you're like, there's no way that can be the way it goes. And then you will feel something when Tony Stark sacrifices himself. Like,
yeah,
that's a moment that I think every generation resonated with. My parents
yeah,
are tearing up. Kids are tearing up. Middle-aged people are tearing up. It's just like, yeah, it's hard to explain.
Well, and there's, you know, like I think the other side of that in Infinity War specifically, but it shows up in Endgame too, like Josh Brolin's Thanos performance, but also the way that Marcus and McFeely frame the entire narrative of Infinity War around him. Like that's where, when we're talking about Civil War, I think if you sit down to Civil War, and there are times where it's like, okay, is this a movie about like the Winter Soldier and about like, or is it about like Tony's parents, or is it about the debate between like freedom and security, or, you know, like there are a lot of things going on, and I think that it juggles all of them really well. But I think what's impressive about Infinity War is it has more characters, but it's such a
less
simple,
going on. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like we're introduced in the first scene.
It's a smash and grab
to Thanos. Yeah. And it's just like, I'm going to collect all these things and then I'm going to snap
and I'm
half
gonna
of people
stop
out of existence.
Anyone who's in my way.
Yeah. And then he just does. That's just what happens. Like, yeah,
that is literally what happens. You just watch it for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. It's like a really, like even symmetrical movie. Like the first and last shot are essentially just Thanos like saying what he's going to do and then having done it. And the way that they like the way they ended it, when they ended it, where all of the characters are and how they're paired off. Like all of that, I think, is not to detract from Civil War, which is like at the top of our tier one. But like, I think that Civil War was such a learning experience for that filmmaking team, because there's just like, everything is so perfect. Like everything is like
the best writing ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's all thought through. It's all balanced. Like,
and I feel like often when we talk about these films, one thing we don't bring up is it needs to be said how special Josh Brolin was.
Yeah.
Thanos becomes one of the greatest villains in movie history. I think you would throw him up there with any of the, you know, like the Joker, Darth Vader. You're throwing Thanos in there. And part of that is Josh Brolin. Part of it's the way they make him look. And part of it's the writing Josh Brolin gets, like these epic monologues and just a character that is, I know now it's become kind of like cliche to be like, here's why you have to resonate with the villain. But at the time, coming from a world where like villains are just bad, like the Joker is just a bad guy. You're not trying to feel for the Joker. He's just a bad guy. It was pretty revolutionary to have this guy who's like, he kind of almost gets sad when he's like, oh, now I got to kill you too. I don't want to kill you, but you're in my way. And like, this is my destiny, but you just don't get it. Like, I remember when a couple times, like when Gamora, when Wanda kind of snap at him and they say like, you'll never get this or you don't know. And he goes like, oh, I do know. Like, it's just like, that's the villain speaking. And to have the whole movie be centered around him to where the last shot is, oh, I did it. Like, that's what it feels like to do it.
Yeah.
Just a genius call. And it's now to the point where I couldn't envision anyone else besides Josh Brolin doing it. So that's just not something we talk about a lot.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it's also the way that he like almost whispers every line.
Yeah.
Like it's like he doesn't, it's conveying
he's
how
not
powerful,
shouting.
Yeah. And whenever he does is when you can tell that he's kind of, he's rattled, you know, like the like rain fire in Endgame when it's like he's panicky. And it's so measured, which I think sort of highlights how powerful he is, because he doesn't feel the need to like posture at all. But he also he's almost like, especially in Infinity War, like the version of Thanos that we get then that has now kind of lost things as contrasted to the version and Endgame from 5 years earlier, like he is almost like empathetic. Like you feel like he doesn't actually want to kill everybody. Like he wishes that he didn't have to, but he is convinced that that's the right, like that's his duty.
Right.
And he's still the villain and it's still a terrible thing to do, but you kind of have this like,
and like, then you get the version in Endgame that's just more pissed off because he hasn't gone through that yet. It's like, it never was personal, but now, I look forward to shredding your universe.
It's like, it's interesting what Brolin does like at the end of Endgame, right before he gets dusted. It's one of my favorite moments in that movie. And I always, when he just kind of sighs and, like everyone else, you know, is kind of like looking around, like what's going on. And he's just like, he's aware of what's happening and he accepts it. It's just like, he's like, yeah, okay, well I lost, you know, this is
fair game almost. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's so, it just, it, the character feels like totally consistent across the board, even when you do have the kind of younger, hungrier, angrier version. Like they kind of meet up in that moment when it's like you're still seeing, it's this like there's a weird wisdom to him that, like, for instance, you never would have seen from like Ultron or Loki in the prior movies.
I watch on YouTube sometimes just the sequence of the big three, Tony, Cap, and Thor, walking up, not even the fight, but just walking up to Thanos and just what that signified for me. Cause I get this villain that I'm like, I've gone through so much with now, and the performance, something we just said about Josh Brolin, I'm feeling, and he's giving this awesome dialogue, just sitting there whispering it. He's not shouting it. He's slowly putting his helmet on, like knowing what's about to happen. But then also they were genius in isolating the three that they know are like the foundation of this thing. And for so many years have had disagreements, even in Ultron disagree. And now it's the three of them going, let's kill him properly this time, and not joking to each other, and just like on the same team, on the same page, like this is what has to happen. I watch that moment on repeat sometimes just because it feels so special to have all the background with all four of those characters and just get that isolated moment is like, that's who I wanted. I wanted those three to show down with him. Like they needed extra time between them and him.
Yeah.
It's just so good. The way the Russos handled it all, unbelievable. Okay, we got to go. That is our first ever official, and I like this. This is our official ranking of the Infinity Saga. I love the introduction of the S tier because for me, I don't like watching Black Panther more than Ragnarok, but I think it's a perfect movie to remove from the equation when trying to set these things up. I think you could maybe nitpick little things within the tiers, but I think for the most part, you and I are on the same page with a few discrepancies on what our ranking should look like, and this is it. This is so fun. You'll notice at the bottom, we still have Far From Home. Technically, Spider-Man Far From Home is an Infinity Saga film. It actually came out just a few months after Endgame. Mm-hmm. But as you'll hear in our next episode, or our next ranking episode, it's a really unique thing. You and I didn't love the release so close to Endgame, although it does it really well.
Yeah.
And so in our watch order, it's actually not even the next project. It's three more projects away. So we're going to rank that one next time because we're using our watch order.
Yeah. Well, and since we did that, and you know, we put this together in 2019 originally, but since then, obviously we have had WandaVision and The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Marvel has also put out their official MCU timeline book. And this movie actually takes place after both of those projects anyway. So we placed them earlier as we got into our Multiverse Saga watch order. But I think that even it's like further evidence that this should be kicked, because it's sort of weird to, like, there's no discernible reason to watch this movie before those.
Right.
Other than the fact that I think Sony was just intent on getting a Spider-Man movie out.
This has been so much fun. Thanks for following along. Thanks for watching. Please don't forget to subscribe to this YouTube channel below. And if you're listening on a podcast front, then please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We would appreciate going through this next saga with you all. We'll see you back here next time on Friends From Work.